Hi everyone. For my project, I'm covering chapters 17 through 19 in teaching English as a second or foreign language, and chapter 6 in unlocking English learners' potential. Chapter 17 was about grammar. Grammar is about the form of the language and making meaning. Skilled users of grammar not only express themselves accurately and meaningfully, but also present themselves in ways that they wish to be seen. Grammar is often misunderstood because it's ambiguous. So people might think that it's how the language should be used rather than how it actually is put into use. The main focus of this chapter was on descriptive grammar, which basically means that it's how we actually use the language, even if it's not aligning with like the actual textbook definition of how language is supposed to work. Grammar is all about form and like why form changes and why it's being used. And it's important to understand as teachers that these students are probably not going to have the best understanding of grammar right off the bat. So grammar is made up of three dimensions, which is form, meaning, and use. Form is the lexical pattern. Meaning is the lexical meaning and grammatical meaning. And the use is social context, linguistic discourse, and co-text. So that's probably the most important one. What's confusing about grammar is that a lot of times you can add letters to the end of a word and have it change the entire meaning. So a lot of ELL students may have trouble determining this based on their culture. So for example, in English, we say he broke his arm, whereas in Spanish, the exact translation would be he broke the arm. So this is the use of a possessive determiner, which would be like adding an S at the end, which is really hard for ELL students to grasp at first, just because their first language does not use possessive nouns like that. So as for the learning process, learners do not learn one construction at a time. So they might learn all of a set of grammar at once, but even when it appears that they know them all, they still will probably make mistakes, just like we will. And they rely on the experience they already have. So for example, their first language, like I just spoke about. So when you're teaching, it's important to present, practice, and produce the information. So first have the students learn, and then put the grammar rules into practice in all aspects of the classroom. So not only just reading and writing, but maybe include it in an activity or a different subject area, and then help them to communicate with it. It's also really important to focus on form. So when you're speaking to your students, to use the correct grammar, because that's going to help them pick it up more. And then, like I said, input flooding, which would be to include this kind of grammar in all aspects of the curriculum. So in math class, science class, English class, etc. And then finally, input processing. So attending to the properties of language and meaningful activities. So really hammer down on this during class, like to pay attention to grammar. And what to remember is basically that students can pick up on grammar, but picking up on grammar verbally is a lot different than picking it up in written form. So the pickup might not be exactly accurate, which is fine, but it's always a work in progress. And then, just like always, students don't do well when they're only given a strict rule to follow. It's important to be moldable and communicate with your students about what they need. So chapter 18 is about spoken grammar. Spoken grammar is the grammar we find regular, repeated use, and expert users of the language in the majority of their spoken interactions. So forms of grammar have evolved, so they're not the exact same as written grammar, but they shouldn't be ignored because we perform these and then they often become written or read in grammar. Speaking grammar has become much more important to teaching, so we need to distinguish spoken grammar versus written grammar as teachers. And what makes it so important is that it's real time. So talking face to face with students can be a little bit different because they don't have any time to react or think, as where if they were reading a book, they would have time to maybe go back, reread, think about it a little bit in their head. But spoken grammar, you don't have that opportunity to think about it, which can make it a little bit more pressure and difficult for them. Spoken grammar should be addressed and students should be able to freely practice it so that they can get real world experience. And students will probably not be familiar with the characteristics of spoken grammar, but like we said before, that's okay. They'll catch up on it later. So chapter 19 is teaching and learning vocabulary for second language learners. So basically the main concept of this is, what does it mean to know a word? To know the meaning, to know how it's used. And their definition is that it means you should know a great deal about this word. Some of these words will be obtained by direct instruction, so vocabulary tests, exams, while others are learned incidentally by social interaction or something of that nature. There are many, very many parts to vocabulary, and vocabulary, like everyone, ELLs will learn incrementally. So there's no way to teach the students all of the words they need to know, but as teachers, we need to remember that we have to use word learning strategies to become independent learners. So use the clues and context and help them help themselves. So there are approximately 20,000 word families in the English language, and a level one English speaker, or excuse me, a first learner will learn about 1,000 word families a year and have about 5,000 words per year. So the ELL students will have a deficit in the amount of vocabulary they have acquired. So this is kind of a little bit of where we see the difference in students in the classroom. They may not just have that sheer quantity of vocabulary, which can be a little bit hard for them to write, perform well in the classroom, understand other subjects. It can be a little bit difficult for them. But like we said before, it's impossible to teach the students all of the words they need to know, but we have to give them the tools to do so. So finally, chapter 6 in Unlocking English Learners' Potential is about academic vocabulary learning. So academic vocabulary is words used in academic contexts, such as a conversation or discussion, but they may have more than one meaning across content areas. ENL or ELL students generally have more difficulty learning academic vocabulary because it's already hard for English mastering students to speak. So when we're teaching vocabulary, we should remember five things. One, the text that we pull from should be engaging. And central to the so the words that we pull from these texts should be central to the understanding of the text. So we don't want to pull out random words that have no meaning to the situation. We want to pull out words that the article could not really function well without. Two, we want them to appear frequently. Three, have them appear in other content areas. So maybe have a vocabulary word that fits in a science class as well. Four, have multiple meanings. So a word that we're going to see used again and again, but for different reasons. And then five, have affixes, so prefixes and suffixes, so we can learn how to maneuver a word. Think about it this way. You want to give this ELL student the most bang for their buck. So you want to have those five different types of qualities in this word so that they can also learn well. So some strategies. One, provide student-friendly definitions. So the example in the book was the word survive. It can be defined as to remain alive, to continue to exist, to remain alive after death of someone. Students will often get caught up in the exist, alive, and remain. So the best definition to use would be to continue to live. 2, use a non-example, example, and concrete representations. So the example in the book was an equation. The definition is an equation is a mathematical statement that shows two expressions are equal. 3x minus 2 equals 4x plus 7. The facts or characteristics of this is that it has exactly one equal sign, left and right sides are equivalent, and it may have more than one solution. A non-example of this would be 2x plus 3y. That's an expression. And then x is greater than y, which is an inequality, and 3, which is a number. So you'd use those non-examples to help prove what an equation is. Students need to learn the information through engaging in relevant content areas so they can have that content become concrete. But it's going to take some time to have the content become concrete. And there are a lot of ways to put vocabulary into practice. So one example is a speaking activity where you'd play a game such as information gap. Students would be paired up and giving information about a word. One student has half the information, the other student has the remaining half. And the students need to work together to close the information gap. There's also more activities like a reading and writing activity where you'd respond to a related prompt using a word bank. So basically it would be a written response or a story using words that they've learned. A game where you'd guess your words. So you'd be assigned a word, but you wouldn't be able to see it. And you have to ask yes or no questions and get to the answer. So 7 things to consider before teaching the students would be, have you selected a short, engaging, content-related vocabulary selection? Have you selected 5 to 10 words central to understanding that appear frequently and may appear in other content areas? So you don't want to flood them with information, but you want to make sure that this is really going to be the best words that they should be learning. 3, have you assessed the students' initial understanding? So do they know these words already, or are they completely unaware of their meaning? Have you taught the words using student-friendly definitions? So like the example before of the meaning of survive. 5, have you given the students opportunity to practice the words in varied ways? So a couple of the examples that I just mentioned, whether it be the writing activity, the game, the speaking activity, etc. 6, have you given the students the opportunities to practice word learning strategies, like using clues and cognates? And 7, have you reassessed the student understanding of the new words? So at the end of all of these activities, have you ensured that the students actually understand where they're coming from? So with all this information, the hope is that you can teach grammar and vocabulary very well in your classroom and that you'll have a lot of success with it. Thanks for listening.